turn to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 24. We're looking at chapters 24 and 25 tonight. We look at chapter 24. We'll begin with verse 1. Here Solomon says, "Be not envious against evil men, neither desire to be with them." How many times do we see that people who are wicked seem to be prospering? We even sing about it in some of the songs, about why do the wicked prosper year after year? Seems like they just do better than the righteous do every year. But Solomon says, don't be envious of that. Don't desire to be with them. Because even if they may be prospering in the physical things of this life, spiritually, we know what their end is. So there's no reason to follow after them. Verse 2, he says, "For their heart studies destruction, and their lips talk of mischief." And they're headed for that destruction. So we don't want to be envious of them, even if it seems like they have things better than we do at times. And certainly it does seem that way sometimes to us all. Then down in verses 11 and 12, here he talks a little bit about the idea of there was law in the law of Moses regarding if someone was found murdered or if some crime had been committed, they were to investigate to find it out and punish the evildoers. Notice what he says here. He says, "If thou forbear to deliver them that are drawn unto death and those that are ready to be slain." In other words, if you won't deliver up the guilty, if you're not going to punish those that are deserving of death, he's telling you, as a nation, as the people, as a group of people. Verse 12, he says, "If thou sayest, behold, we knew it not." In other words, we didn't know. That's kind of, in our court system, we have that innocent until proven guilty, and then in the court of law, it has to be guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. But if you know, and yet you still withhold, he's saying here, we didn't know. And he says, "Does not he that pondereth the heart consider it? And he that keeps the soul, does not he know it? And shall not he render to every man according to his works?" So in other words, he said, we can set the guilty free. We say, there was too much doubt, we weren't sure. And we may set that person free, but the Lord knows. And they can't escape his judgment. And in the same way, sometimes people who are known to be guilty, but for some reason or another, they're just not punished for their guilt. The Lord knows that as well. There's not he that pondereth the heart. See, we can't keep these secret thoughts in our heart and expect that God's not going to know about them. He'll know. You see it, this same principle played out in churches all the time. Folks living wickedly, and the leadership of churches just ignoring it, just going on as though nothing's wrong. But the Lord knows. He's going to render to every man according to his works. He's going to cause those to pay for those things they have done. And then in verse 17 and 18, he turns toward our attitude toward our enemy. He says, "Rejoice not when thine enemy falleth, and let not thine heart be glad when he stumbleth." You know, often, we see our enemy, and boy, when something bad happens to our enemy, we go, "Yeah, that's great. Good. Oh, got what they deserve. They've had that coming for a long time." He says, "No, don't do that." Because notice what he says, "Lest the Lord see it, and it displease him, and he turn away his wrath from him." And it may be that the Lord knows how wicked your enemy is, and is executing some wrath upon him, but if you have a bad attitude about it and it's going to cause you to have a sinful attitude, the Lord may relent on that wrath. He may not follow through with it. He may see your attitude and decide to not punish that individual so badly. So we need to think about that. But we need to, instead, we'll see in chapter 25 what Solomon says we should do toward our enemies, the attitude we should have toward them. Verses 21 and 22, he says, "My son, fear thou the Lord and the king, and meddle not with them that are given to change, for their calamity shall rise suddenly, and who knoweth the ruin of them both." Other translations indicate that this given to change is the idea of overthrowing the government, trying to revolutionize things. But I think about this in the church as well. You know, there's a big movement right now. We've got to change things. We can't keep doing that same old thing. That's too old. We got to get with the times, and we got to catch it. We got to do things the way they do things now. We got to get this thing modern. We got to change. And Solomon says, "Meddle not with them that are given to change." Of course, they want to change everything. Now, change can be a good thing. You know, I hope all of you change your clothes every once in a while. You know, change is a good thing. When a light bulb burns out, we change it. Change can be a helpful thing and a productive thing, and even in the church. I mean, we change who leads songs and who serves on the Lord's table and who does announcements. We change that up. Different ones. We sing different songs. We change which songs you sing. You know, can you imagine how boring it should be? If we just came and sang the same three songs and had exactly the same prayer, and that'd get old. But we do change. We do make some changes from time to time, and it's good to have some change. Sometimes we'll have a service, and then we'll have a fellowship meal and just a little short service. Sometimes we have song night. Sometimes we have prayer. We do different things to change to some degree. But there are some things that we can't change. There's some things that God has set as law. And then there are other things that are just traditions. And those things that are traditions, we can change. We can discuss those things and come to an agreement to change them and make new traditions or just discard some traditions if that's all they are. But we have to understand the difference between what's tradition and what's law and what God has commanded. Notice what he says in verse 22, "For the calamity shall rise suddenly." Calamity shall rise suddenly. If you're one of these that's always trying to stir up trouble, trying to stir up change, trying to overthrow the leadership of whatever it is, whether it's the home or the church or the country, whatever, that calamity is going to fall on you quickly, suddenly. You won't be able to know when it's coming. When it comes, you won't be prepared for it. He warns us about those that are given to change. Then in verse 32, he's talking specifically here about the slothful man who didn't take care of his land, didn't take care of his vineyard. But notice what he says in verse 32. He says, "Then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction." Oh, if we could cultivate that ability. Why is it that so many of us have to learn the hard way? We've got to do it ourselves and try it ourselves and ruin our lives before we realize how foolish something really was. Why can't we do like Solomon did and see somebody else doing that and consider that and take instruction from that? Why is it that we're so hard-headed? And we see all these other people going to, but we say, "Well, that won't happen to me. I can avoid that." All the time, we see people who say, "Oh no, I can stop drinking anytime I want to." They're alcoholics. "Oh, I just like to smoke a little marijuana every once in a while, just a little bit." And pretty soon they're hooked on all kinds of drugs. Do we have to go down that road? "Oh, it won't happen to me. I'm strong enough. I can handle this." start out buying a little lottery ticket here and there, a raffle ticket here and there. Before long, they've gambled away their whole house. We don't need to have to do those things in order to learn from them. When we see it, consider it, look upon it, and receive instruction so you don't have to do it yourself. I don't have to know, I don't have to touch a fire to know that it's hot. We don't have to go and do these. And how many men, thinking that they could enjoy a little bit on the side, wound up destroying the whole family? Because they thought they could get away with it. It doesn't work that way. It never works that way. We need to see what other people have done and learn from their mistakes. Receive instruction. And this last one here in verse 32 is actually in a section that may or may not have actually been written, one of Solomon's. It may have been some that he had gleaned somewhere else. In verse 23, he had said, these things also belong to the wise, and then he begins this little section. So maybe that these were some things some other people taught him, and some other things that he learned elsewhere. Then we come to chapter 25. 25 and verse 1 tells us that these are also Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied out. So some of these are some that when Hezekiah became king, he found some of Solomon's writings, and then his men copied these down so that we would have a record of them. And some of these are either the same as or very similar to some others that we already have. But there are some new ones in here as well, in this section as well. So look at verses 14. Verse 14 says, whoso boasteth himself of a false gift is like clouds and wind without rain. You ever had somebody promise you they were going to do, oh, I'm going to do such and such for you. I'm going to get you such and such. I'm going to give you such. And they never do. That's a false gift. I remember there was something about with all of the hurricanes and the disasters, the tsunamis and the earthquakes and everything that's been happening. There have been, you know, people have been making pledges. I'm going to pledge a certain amount of this to give to that. And some of those folks have pledged a lot of money that they never followed through with. They made a big deal out of it, made sure the TV cameras were rolling, made these pledges. Well, I'm going to give $1 million to such and such or whatever. And then didn't ever, when the cameras got turned off, then they went on about their business and figured, well, everybody will forget about that. But it looked good for me to say it and for everybody to see me promising that. And sometimes that's the way some people are. They boast about what they're going to do, but they never follow through with it. And we don't need to be that kind of an individual. And he likens it to clouds and wind without rain. And we used to, in West Texas, we'd see the lightning, we'd see a few clouds off in the distance and think, oh, maybe it's going to come this way. And the whole 3 months that I lived there, it actually came one time. Would you see that lightning? Nearly every night you could see the lightning off in the distance. It was promising, it's the rain, but the rain never came. It kept promising, and the wind would kick up, and it'd cool off in the evening. You said, well, maybe we're going to get some rain. Never would come. And so he says it's the same way with somebody that promises gifts and then doesn't follow through with it. Then he goes on to say in verse number 15, and remember now, each one of these verses is a saying of its own. For the most part, there are some that are connected together, but a lot of them, it's just one sentence saying. Proverbs, that's exactly what they are for the most part. But verse 15, he says, by long forbearing is a prince persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone. Can you imagine trying to break a bone with your tongue? He said you can do it. I don't know, how many of you have ever seen like the Grand Canyon, or any other canyon for that matter? I remember when we lived out in Colorado, we went to see the Grand Canyon down there in Arizona. Well, I tell you, that thing's huge. But it came little by little by that river, cutting through all of the sand and the dirt and the rock, and it cut out this huge cascade. heaven. Now, a water drop is pretty soft. A little bit of water, I mean, you can run it over your hands and it won't hurt you. And yet, over time, it made a huge canyon. And that's exactly what Solomon's talking about here. That it's that persistence, that patience. When he talks about forbearing, it's talking about being patient, keeping after something, and giving it time, and keeping on, and keeping on. So that's the way you change it. And in the same way as tongues can break a bone, I think he's being a little overstating. He doesn't mean that with your tongue, you can physically go and break a bone. You know, like karate chopping or something like that, or gnaw it in half. But I think what he's talking about is by the things that you say with your tongue. And you can do far more than break a bone. Many people have been killed by that little soft tongue. Many huge structures of steel and concrete have been destroyed by that little tongue. People like Osama bin Laden, who by their tongue taught and encouraged others to fly planes into buildings and blow them up. You think that now Osama bin Laden never killed anybody probably in his whole life, personally, physically. But by his tongue, he slaughtered thousands. The tongue is a powerful weapon. And it can be a powerful weapon for good or for evil. You look at how Jesus used his tongue to teach the truth. And at the same time, others use their tongue in quite the opposite way. So we need to watch out for that. Verse 11, going along with this idea of the tongue, verse 11 says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. I said, you speak the right word at the right time. Sometimes that can have more impact than all of the physical violence and all of the physical strength and all of the money for that matter in the world. Just one word spoken at the right time. Make a world of difference. Then I promised we'd get to how Solomon says we ought to treat our enemies. Verses 21 and 22. He says, you really want to get back at your enemy? You really want to make them suffer? He says, if thine enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat. If he be thirsty, give him water to drink. For thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head, and the Lord shall reward. You want to really make them suffer? You return their evil with kindness. They don't know what to do with it. It drives them crazy. Because they're expecting you to yell and cuss and scream and try to hurt and hit and right back at them. And when you don't react that way, they don't know what to do. They're so confused. They're stunned. And it just makes them all the more angry. See, goodness is almost like a, you know, you've seen, I know that, you know, they kind of make these things, exaggerate all this kind of stuff, but it, you know, they make vampire movies and stuff, and a cross will burn them, because, well, that's representing, you know, something holy, and they're so evil, but that just burns them, and all these kind of things. But the fact of the matter is, that good is stronger. But it's also more difficult sometimes to be good than it is to be. The natural reaction is to cut back at them just like they cut at you. But if we can have the self-control to turn around and do good to those that do evil to us, it will set them on fire. Not physically. But emotionally, it will do things to them that you can never do to them otherwise. Solomon has said that the best way to get rid of an enemy is to make him your friend. You make your enemies your friend pretty soon, you won't have any enemies. And Then finally tonight, verse 28. And this goes along with that, being good to your enemies. And you know, it's interesting that Solomon said that, because the law under Moses that was being taught by the time Jesus came along was very different from that. You've heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But that wasn't what Solomon had taught. Something changed from the time of Solomon to the time of Jesus, and the religious leaders had changed their position on how to treat your enemies. They changed. But he says in verse 28, he that hath no rule over his own spirit, in other words, you lack self-control, you don't have any rule over your own spirit, that one is like a city that is broken down and without walls. Now, at that time, walls were so important to be a defense against attack. Well, self-control is the wall that we surround ourselves with to defend us against attack. Someone without self-control can be provoked so easily by another. It's like invading a city that didn't have any walls. Well, it's easy to invade a city without walls. You just walk in. Somebody, you know, we don't have walls here, you know, around our city in Butler. You know, if somebody wanted to invade it, all they'd have to do is come in on the highway. But the cities back then, you know, they had the city walls and the gates that they closed, and they could withstand attack for a long period of time until their food and water ran out. They could withstand it. And that's the way self-control is with us. It's our defense. If we don't have self-control, then all we do is react to whatever others do. We just allow other people to control our actions. And that's, who would you rather have in control of you? Yourself or someone else? It's a sad thing to see someone who allows other people to control them. We talk about somebody who knows how to push your button. Well, if you get those buttons under your own control, they couldn't push them anymore. Now, that's easier said than done, but it's something to work for. Get control over yourself. And by doing that, we'll be able to defend ourselves against all of these attacks. Because who is our biggest attacker? Well, it's Satan. And Satan knows, if anybody does, how to attack. We can get control over those things, give control of our lives over to God, and then allow Him to defend us against those things. Allow that control to be out of Satan's hands. He won't be able to touch us anymore. I was reading a book, and I don't believe it's a true story, but it's a recreation of historical events to some degree. And someone said, you know, I control you by your soul. You may control my body, but you can't control my soul. You can't own that. God owns that. You can't have it. The only way somebody else can control our soul is if we let them. Well, they can physically take us and take us prisoner and enslave us physically and beat us and torture and do all sorts of things to this body. But what did Jesus say? Fear not those who can kill the body, but after that have no power. That's all they can do. It's something to this body. They can't control my spirit, my soul. They can't control that unless I let them. We need to watch out for some of those things. Solomon continues to warn us of the dangers and continues to give us good advice. Sometimes we don't believe it. We read that about doing good to your enemies and how that wouldn't really work. Try it. Really try it. Think about your worst enemy. And think about the nicest thing you can do to them. Go do it and see how they react. Just don't watch it. If you're here tonight and you haven't need to respond to the invitation for any reason, we ask that you do so as you stand.